With Nick Sicilian in May of 1982. Oh, you got your card. Yeah, I've seen your picture in the paper. Mm-hmm. You're a car salesman, right?
Yes, sir.
I often wondered if you'd be interested in talking about the crime. Were you born in number two mine?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. What year was that?
October the 24th, 1921.
How old were you at the time of the murder?
9 years old. It was in 1930. Oh, uh-huh. July the 23rd.
Uh-huh. 1930. What was it like living in number two mine in those days?
Oh, well, there was just, everybody was coal miners. We went to school up top of the hill, and we didn't have no high school there.
You
we
mean where that church is now?
No.
What top of the hill?
Well, you know, across about 200 yards from the church used to be a school. Now it's a Stodolac garage down at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, I know. I talked to Miss Stodolac. You know her?
She's yes.
Helen. Living there. Do you remember her back in those days? Was she living there then?
Yes. Everybody's all natives down there.
Oh, I see.
There's a few people there, the strangers now, but there's about four families.
Oh, so it was a pretty close group, huh? You knew each other.
Oh, yes.
Were you close?
Oh, yes.
Oh. So it was even worse a crime because everyone knew each other, huh?
That's right.
Did you know Mr.
Demofonte?
Demofonte, is that how it's pronounced?
His name was Marco Demofonte.
Not Demofonte, huh?
No, Demofonte.
Okay. The newspaper, I think, misspelled it, because I think they spell it Demofonte.
And
what was he like? What kind of a man
was he? Was a real nice gentleman. And he used to shoot blackbirds. And us children used to go and pick him up for him. He used to eat blackbirds.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And he was a barber and a coal miner.
Oh. So he was a barber, huh?
Yes, he was a barber and a coal miner. He cut all our hair out down there. Everybody come up for a coal for their haircut in the coal mines. And we had two blocks there, if you noticed. One up the upper block and the lower block where the coal mine was.
Below Mrs. Stodolac was the coal mine area, huh?
Yes, you had to go down there about another half mile.
Where was the company store?
The company store was up towards Brent.
Oh, that it was not down by the mine.
No, it was up the hill from the Stodolac garage, going towards Brent.
Is that where that big brick building
yes,
is?
Sir,
is that it?
That was the company store.
I wondered
store.
About that. Because it has bars on the windows. What, what were the bars for?
Well, to keep people from going in and stealing stuff.
Oh, there was valuable stuff in there. I see.
They used to sell some spark plugs. You could buy a new motor. You could buy a horse collar. You could buy anything in there, clothing.
How are the prices in the store, a company store?
It was okay. The prices were okay. But today you could get a credit, but they'd take it out of your wages, you know.
Oh, I see. So everybody knew each other on that
That's
street.
That's right.
What kind of a school was it? It's near that brick building? Is that what you... Is it
no,
still
the school
there?
Was just up over the hill, 100 yards from where it's sitting now. The garage is sitting now. They drug it down over the hill.
Oh, I see. I think I remember saying that. It didn't. It used to be a school, then they abandoned it, and the Stodolacs took it and bought it, right?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
The bell is sitting in the Stodolac yard there that was
is
on
that
there.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh.
It had all 8 grades in there.
How many kids were in the school?
Oh, about 38 to 40 kids all the time.
I see. Well, what kind of a man was... Mr. Demofonte.
He was a sociable man,
was
you know.
Was he? Did you ever have the slightest idea that he was mentally deranged?
Oh, no. No.
Just a nice guy, huh?
Just a nice guy. He was. He used to come over our house. They used to play cards at our house.
I heard somewhere that the doctor had seen that there was something wrong with him, and he warned the police. Is that true? Do you know?
I heard that, but I didn't know for sure. They wanted to lock him up there, but his wife wouldn't let him.
Oh, is that right?
That's what I heard about it after, you know.
Yeah.
And then this morning, he was supposed to go to work. And at 7 o'clock, the whistle would blow when everybody, you know, was at the mine ready to work. So he was, the way I understood it, he was having his coffee there. And he went upstairs. He came back down with his shotgun. He shot his wife and her sister. It was his sister-in-law. His wife, his wife's sister was named Mrs. Facetti. That was Alfonso Fassetti's wife that was shot. They shot them both.
They lived in number 2 mine too?
Yes. Uh-huh. She lived one end of the blocks and they lived in the other. But she come down to have coffee with her sister.
I see. How many children did she have?
I think it was 7.
And how many did Demofanti have?
6.
Six. Mm-hmm. So there's 13 children right there.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then he went up over the, started up over the hill. Mrs. Yakella was hanging clothes. Uh-huh. And he shot her in the head.
Uh-huh.
And
all
killed
the,
her.
All three in the head?
Yeah, all three of them was in the head.
Uh-huh.
And see, I talked to Mr. Cunningham, and he told me about where they were shot, see?
Oh, I see.
Then he come up the road, and I was playing on my, I was pulling my wagon, and he pointed the gun at me. When I saw him point the gun at me, I turned around and started the run, and he shot me twice in the back.
With his shotgun?
With his shotgun, yes, sir.
Oh, you got pellets in your back, huh?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Dr. Vogan worked for 4 hours on me to take it out, take him out. I still got pellets in my lungs, and I've got pellets here. You can feel them in here.
Is that right?
In my shoulder here yet.
How far away was he when he pointed the gun at you?
Oh, about 15 feet, but then again, he shot. I was about, about 20, 25 yards away from him. Knocked me down every time.
Uh-huh. Oh, he shot twice?
Oh, yeah, shot me twice in the back.
What was the look on his face when you first saw him?
He just
blank or
blank-like, you know.
Uh-huh, and he raised the shotgun and you knew he meant to kill you?
That's right.
Had you heard the earlier shots?
No. No, I didn't know what was happening, you know. I just asked him, when he was coming up the road, I said, you're going to shoot Blackbirds, Marco. And he turned around and pointed the gun at me, and when he did that, I started running.
Oh, I see.
So I was laying on the ground there, and my mother come out and got me and took me in a house and locked the doors.
Uh-huh.
Then he smashed the window on the side there and come in a house.
Oh, he was coming after you.
Yeah, and he come in a house, and my mother tried to protect me. She went and got a pistol, and this pistol was one of those, they called him a lemon squeezer. It had a safe in the back that if you didn't push down on it, it wouldn't shoot.
Uh-huh.
She tried to shoot him, and he shot her right in the side here
uh-huh.
with the shotgun. I watched everything.
Oh.
I was down. And then he... She fell on the floor, and he started hitting her with the gun.
Did he say anything while he was doing it?
No, he was just making noises with his mouth, like hoom, hoom, just like uh-huh. that. I can remember it as plain as it was today.
Uh-huh.
And I saw what was happening, so I wanted to run upstairs with my sister. So I was under the bed by that time, and I started to run, and he shot me in the leg here.
You mean, as you were running up the stairs, he shot you in the leg?
Yeah. And then again, I got up there, yeah. Whoa. And then he went outside and hollered for this guy that used to hunt with him. Hey, Smokey Joe, we going to hunt? And this guy had a rifle there.
Mm-hmm.
He could have saved my mother if he would have shot her, mm-hmm. shot him, but he was scared to shoot him. Then George Masters, he used to be the store manager.
Mm-hmm.
Heard about it? No. Before that, as...
Wait, before we get to George Masters, what were you thinking when you ran up the stairs? Were you thinking anything at all? That must have been a terrible incident.
Yeah, I kept hollering. He killed Mom.
Is that right? Did you suffer from that afterward? Did it bother you? Have nightmares or anything like that?
Oh, yeah.
I imagine. That's terrible. Yeah. Boy, what a terrible crime.
Yeah. Then he come up he started down the street, and a shoemaker come down with a good friend of his.
Oh, wait a minute. He shot you going up the stairs.
Yeah. Then
did he come after you?
No,
or
he didn't come
then
after
he
me.
Then he left,
no.
huh?
Then he left. He
you
went
think
out
he thought you were dead?
Yeah. He went out the door, and this shoemaker come down with a good friend of his, and I can't remember his name.
But he
said, Marco, what are you doing? This gentleman, or this guy that was supposed to... Heard him say that. He just turned over and just blowed part of his head off.
Oh. Didn't he hear the shooting?
Who?
The hunting friend?
Yeah, but he wouldn't shoot him. He had a .30-30 rifle leveled on him and wouldn't shoot him.
Oh, I see.
Didn't have the guts. You know what I mean?
Well, he's a friend of his.
Yeah, right? That's right.
What kind of a guy was the guy who was the hunter?
Oh, he was a big hunter. He was a nice guy. You know what I mean?
Close friends?
Yeah, they were close friends. They hunted together.
Why didn't he shoot? Of course, you weren't there, huh?
I wasn't there, but they claim he just told the people he just didn't have the heart to shoot the man, you know.
Yeah, I imagine.
But then he shot this shoemaker. I can't think of the shoemaker's name. Then after he shot the shoemaker, this George Masters come down over the hill.
Uh-huh.
And he told him to stop, and he pointed the gun at him. The gun was empty. He clicked it twice. George Masters told me this, the man had shot him.
Uh-huh.
And then he shot him in the leg, and he dropped him. And then a bunch of guys come out and held him down.
Uh-huh. Did he say anything when the gun clicked?
I don't know if he said anything, but George Masters didn't give him a chance.
What kind of a man was George Masters? How old was he?
George Masters at that time, I'd say, was 40 years old. He was the manager of the Union Supply Company, the company store.
What kind of a guy was he?
Oh, he was a gentleman. He was a nice gentleman. He was a brave man.
Do you think he's the sort of guy you would have thought would be able to shoot him?
That's right. Uh-huh. He would, you know, to protect somebody's life.
Uh-huh.
When he heard what everything happened, and his boy lives in town here, you know.
Oh, is that right?
His boy is named Charles Masters. In fact, he's one of our councilmen.
Oh.
And he lives right in town here. Uh-huh. And we talk about it once in a while when he comes up to the garage and sees me, you know.
What happened then, after... he was shot down.
Well, by that time, the police...
Were you conscious?
Oh, yeah. They took me and my mother in the ambulance. My mother died in the hospital. See, she didn't die at home. She died in the hospital about 2 hours after she got there.
Uh-huh.
And Cunninghams were told to come and get me, too. They thought I was dead.
Oh.
But when they got there, Dr. Vogan told them, no, he isn't dead. And he worked on me for about 4 hours. It was Dr. Dave Vogan. We used to have a hospital here. It was Mercer Cottage Hospital up here on the hill.
Yes, uh-huh.
Right down over the hill.
He was
the
guy
left
who founded it, isn't he?
Yes, uh-huh. And,
Where is that hospital, by the way?
It's tore down now.
It's torn down.
Yeah, doctor,
whereabouts
it's torn down.
Was it?
It was up on Finley Street Extension. You can go up down here and make a left turn.
Yeah.
And go straight up past the plant here, plant, and it's on top of the hill.
Why'd they tear it down, you know?
Well, because the state wouldn't fund it no more, help them, you know.
I see.
And he was one of the finest doctors. He's dead now.
Is that
but he was
right?
One of the finest doctors he ever knew.
Oh.
Saved a lot of lives.
Uh-huh. He was a big doctor in town, and he worked on you, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. They thought you were dead, what, you were so bloody, I guess?
Oh, yes, yes. Uh-huh. They thought I was dead, too.
Uh-huh.
And Mr., they call him Fuzzy in Grove City, but he is the head of the Cunningham Funeral Home. They was down in Leesburg. The five brothers were down there with their dad. They was in the funeral business, you know.
In Leesburg.
In Leesburg,
And they came up to get the bodies, is that
yes,
it?
Yes.
You were telling me about the difficulty he had getting the bodies out.
Yes, because they was big Italian women, you know. They was maybe...
Mrs. Demophant, is that
Mrs.
it?
Mrs. Demophant and her sister were both big people.
Uh-huh.
And
what did he say?
Well, he told me that he only could get one man, was a butcher down there. His name was Frank Barczyk, had a store down by the mine there.
Yeah, the store that's still there?
Yes, the store that's still there.
Uh-huh.
And he got him to help him load these people on. There was about 2 inches of blood, and every time they go to pick one of these ladies up, they'd slip, you know what I mean? The blood was so slippery in there.
Yeah, oh. Well, they were the ones with the heads blown off, huh?
Yes.
Were their heads decapitated?
No,
or just part
of them.
Uh-huh.
And I guess they fixed them up enough to show them.
Yeah.
This one lady was pregnant, and the baby died inside of her, too. Oh, that was another person that...
Yeah. Did they have a mass funeral for them? Of course, maybe you wouldn't know that.
No, I wouldn't know. I knew my mother was... At that time, they didn't take the people to the funeral home. They took them to their homes, you know.
Yeah, right. They showed them in the home.
Yeah, they showed them in the home. They had Mrs. Demophant and her sister at the Facetti home.
Oh.
They showed them there. My sister told me this. She's 73. She lives in Sharon. She remembers everything, too.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And my mother was showed at our house. Mrs. Jaquella was showed at her house.
Uh-huh. How long were you in the hospital?
I was in a hospital for 43 days.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. A long time.
At that time, they didn't let you up, you know, after an operation, you know, like they do now. They get you up.
When did they tell you your mother was dead?
About 2 weeks after they buried her. And I couldn't believe it, you know, because, you know, I'd ask my dad when he come in, how's mom? And he'd say, oh, she's doing good, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't want to tell me.
You, What was it like to go back to number 2 mine when you recovered? Did you remain in that house?
Yes, we remained at that house.
What was it like to be back there? Anything different? Were you in shock?
Oh, yeah, it was different. You was always looking behind you, worrying about somebody.
Oh,
you know.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, for a while it bothered me, you know. But
yeah, I can imagine.
It was something, you know, I'll never forget it.
Yeah. Did they talk about it much in number two?
Oh, yes, they talked about it. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest thing that ever happened down there, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What happened to all the orphans?
Well, the Demophon children, I don't know what happened, but my dad kept us together, and Mr. Facetti kept his people together, and Mr. Yakella kept us together, you know.
Strong families.
Uh-huh. Yeah. See, I had a sister that was married, and she lived two doors up, so she took care of us.
Oh, I see.
And, See, I have five sisters, and I had three brothers. One's dead.
Oh, you just stuck together and took care of the house and things. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Did you have nightmares of...
Oh, yes, I had some nightmares.
What kind of nightmares? That he was coming after you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Boy.
Yeah.
That'd be tough.
Yeah.
How long... Well, I guess, is there any, how about Mr. Demophant? Do you know what happened to him?
Yes, they put him in an insane asylum in Fairview first.
Fairview. Huh?
For a while, and...
Was he conscious? I mean, when he did he ever talk? Did he say
anything?
Oh, yes,
he was felt so bad that he killed my mother.
Oh, he woke up, in other words.
Yeah, he woke up, but he wanted to kill his wife. And for some reason or other, there was a conflict in there somewhere. And he didn't want to kill my mother or the lady, Mrs. Yakella. He didn't mean to kill them. He said, or shoot me. But my dad talked to him after, up at the jail here.
Oh, what did he say?
And my dad asked him, why did you ruin me like this and shoot my wife? Said, I didn't know I was shooting your wife because I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And but he said he meant to kill his wife and his sister-in-law.
I see.
Like, he thought, you know, in his head that they was plotting to get him or something.
I see. He was crazy then.
Yeah, he was crazy. Yeah. Uh-huh. But,
Do you know what ever happened to him?
I heard he died in Warren, in the mental institution over here.
How long ago, do you know?
I don't know. I don't know how many years. You know, sometime when things happen to you, you don't want to think about things like that too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. Yeah.
I never thought of it till I saw your piece in the paper.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I called you, because I figured somebody like you that was nice enough to try to bring the history out, I'd like to help all I could.
Oh, well, here's what I'd like to do. I'm going to write the book from the newspapers, and then I'm going to interview people like you, and I'd like to include things they say, and I certainly will include what you're saying in the book.
There's another survivor, you know. Her name is Mrs. Lois Guinier, and she lives on Pine Street in Grove City.
How do you spell her last name?
G-O-G-U-N...
Guinier.
Guinier.
On Pine... Guinier.
She's on Pine Street, and I could give you her phone number.
Okay.
I could get it here give it to you. I talked to her yesterday, and I told her you was coming.
Uh-huh.
I said, would you like to talk to him? She said, I really would. She lives in Grove City.
Where was she in the murder?
Well, she and her mother was the next ones to be stabbed before he did the killing, see?
Oh.
See, he stabbed her mother, and then he stabbed her, I think, in a left arm.
Uh-huh.
She still has a big scar here, she'll show you. And
she was next door?
They lived next door to Mr. Dimoff.
Oh, he broke his knife on her, didn't he? On somebody,
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know.
That's the newspaper said. Well, he wanted to stab her, broke the knife, went back in his house and got a shotgun again.
I don't know. I wasn't down there. See, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't. But maybe Mrs. Guinier could, because her name was Mrs. Banan, Miss Banan at that time.
Okay, I'll interview her. I'll call her. Was there much said in Mercer at the time? I suppose that was a sensation, huh?
Oh, yeah, my goodness. In fact, if I can get the paper off my sister to borrow it, I can give you the newspaper from that time.
Oh.
And it has my picture in bed at the hospital.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, with the nurse there.
What,
and I
from
can,
Sharon or where? Sharon newspaper, I mean?
Sharon newspaper. Uh-huh. And I'll even tell you who my nurse was, Miss Manazzi.
Oh, okay.
See, I can remember all that because... Uh-huh. She always kept in contact with me to see how I was doing, because they didn't believe that I'd live with all that shot in my liver and in my lungs.
Oh, I see.
But still, I went to the service.
Well, was it difficult for your health for a while, or what?
No.
You just recovered, huh?
No, I can still run 100 yards.
Oh, good.
But...
What did you do? Is there anything else? Let's see about this murder. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to... give you the manuscript of my book and see. I like your comments on it, and maybe I could include the comments in the book if you're interested.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it'll be a year or so, but when I do, I'd like you to read it if you want to. You know.
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay.
And I know my sisters from Detroit would like to read it too.
Okay.
Because I told them about it, and they're really enthused, you know.
Good.
But
yeah,
they said, thank God somebody was
would
come out and do something like this, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope people like the idea, because...
I think that's fabulous to do it, something like that, because somebody needs to be remembered, the things that happened.
Right, it's fun, it's worth doing. You know, I can't take my... I get so tired reading it, but it's so fascinating, I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into those old newspapers.
That's right.
It's fascinating.
And I love history. That was my best subject in school.
Oh.
I just love history.
Well, I bet you'll like this book. It gets to be some fascinating stuff, where the airport was, you know, and that sort of thing, the big events, the last Civil War veteran. Well, I hope
yes,
to have it done in about a year.
Mm-hmm. And any help we can give you.
Okay, fine.
You just feel free. You got my card there. And
okay.
I just love to... I'd love to do anything for
you. Yeah, okay. I appreciate that. Okay, let's see.
Noon, we just keep going. 1,300 hours is 1 p.m. 1,400 hours would be 2 o'clock. And so on. And the international way of telling time, called Greenwich Mean Time. GMT, or called Zulu Time. The international time is simply the time it is now at the 0 degree line of longitude. What time is it in Greenwich, England, in other words? To convert local time, the 24-hour clock, though, to Zulu time, simply add the number of hours equal to the number of time zones between where you are and the prime meridian, the 0 degree line of longitude through Greenwich, England. For example, on the Pacific coast and Pacific Standard Time, there are 8 time zones between the west coast of the U.S. and England. Therefore, to convert Pacific Standard Time to Greenwich, England, or Zulu Time, add 8 hours. Mountain Time Zone, add 7, Central, 6. Eastern Time, you would add 5, and so on. Let's try an example. Suppose we're going to depart Bakersfield, California. See where I am? At 06:30 Pacific Standard Time, on a 5-hour flight to Roswell, New Mexico. What will the local time be in Roswell when we land? Well, first, and look at the chart, figure 84, add 8 hours to our departure time. We should do that for our FAA flight plans anyway. And the result is a takeoff at 14:30 Zulu. Add 5 hours for the flight, and we'll arrive in Roswell at 19:30 Zulu. Now, to convert Zulu time to Mountain Standard Time, we would subtract, based on the chart, 7 hours. And our time of arrival will be 12:30 Mountain Standard Time. Conducting a flight using dead reckoning type of navigation, we would begin by plotting a course. Using a plotter, the course is plotted on the chart in relation to the lines of longitude and or latitude, and that line over the ground, that track, is called the true course. Now, since there are many different types of plotters, and we're unsure which particular one you have, rather than precise instructions for each, let's look at the concept behind what we're doing in measuring a course. Figure 85 shows it. We're simply measuring the angle between the line of longitude and our course line. One footnote, the measurements we make on a sectional chart that we'll see here in just a moment should be made using a meridian of longitude near the midpoint of the course, because the meridians, remember, converge toward the poles, and the angles formed by lines of longitude and latitude vary from point to point. Look at figure 86. If you're not familiar with the compass rose, let's talk about it a second, you'll certainly want to be for your flying. North, shown as the top, numerical expression would be 0, 0, 0 degrees or 360, both. east is 90 degrees. Now back up a bit. Between 0 and 90, what's right in the middle between the two? About 45 degrees, certainly. All right, east is 90. A flight down to the south, well, exactly south, 180 degrees. And you can figure out the midpoint between 90 and 180. West is 270. And back around to north.
Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3, 4. Can you hear me? This is a very nice tape deck. Nicer than the previous one. Very nice. Can you hear me? He's buying a certificate.
Joe bought this trailer court on the Cranberry Road. When you come up to the past the cemetery here, make a right. That's the Cranberry Road here before you go into town. Uh-huh. Right along the side of town.
Right past the hospital.
The first street to the right, first road to the right. Well, about about a mile down there, Joe bought this trailer court. And he had to have a variance on it, and he's putting in 5 more pads. That's how I met him.
Well, he must be doing pretty well by trailer court.
Leverage. What does that? You do that with leverage. You don't do it with your own money.
Cash,
No, no. No, we didn't. We bought a lot of places, and we never put any cash down, do we?
Yeah. Well, you own 9, huh?
We have 18 rentals.
Wow.
We could borrow $5,000 easier than we can borrow $500.
Is that right? in real estate, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a beautician. She has her own beauty shop.
Oh, I see.
And I just retired from Prudential Insurance after 28 years.
Uh-huh.
And so we've had we've got more irons in the fire now than we ever had, actually.
Uh-huh. You started life as a coal miner?
My father was a coal miner.
Uh-huh.
I worked with my father in the mines when I was going to college.
At number 5?
Uh-huh. No, I worked out number 2. Number 5 had closed then.
Oh, I see.
He worked at number 5 until it closed, and then when I was old enough to go to work, he was working number 2 mine down there, and I was going to Grove City College.
Uh-huh.
And I worked in the summers there.
Oh, I see.
And that's the way I got through college, because between that and the NYA and...
What's NYA?
National Youth Administration. I was under Roosevelt, one of Roosevelt's alphabet
deal,
soup,
huh?
You know, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, I remember that now.
And so it helped me a little. I had very little use for Roosevelt, but it did help me get through college.
What was it like to work in the mines at number two? What kind of a mine was it?
Well, it was a...
Was it dangerous?
Not any more dangerous than any other mine. It was, it was, number two mine was, I, as far as I'm concerned, was an inferior mine to number five because the vein of coal was a lot lower, maybe a foot lower. Oh. And of course, a coal miner gets paid by the tonnage he puts out.
Yeah.
And they take, you have what they call faces, 21 feet long. Supposedly, sometimes it ends up being 30,
mm-hmm.
and they take a like one of these modern saws, power saw.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's called a cutting machine.
Yeah,
has teeth like saw blades, mm-hmm. like saw teeth.
Did they have them then?
Goes around, it goes around a circle like around a bar,
uh-huh.
and it is continuous. When these picks,
yeah.
and they dig in there, they sink it in here and go in 6 feet. The bar was 6 foot long,
uh-huh.
and they go 21 feet long and cut about that much out underneath the coal.
Uh-huh.
And we drilled three holes across there and shot it down with dynamite.
Oh, I see. Then
and
you
then we loaded it into the cars with the shovel.
Did they have that kind of saw back in, was that the
cutting
30s?
Machine.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But that's not the way to do it now.
Uh-huh.
They have a continuous loader now.
Yeah.
I see them on TV. It's
yeah.
amazing what they
yeah.
do. They just run that thing in a coal, it just eats it right out and
uh-huh.
loads it and everything else.
Yeah. You'd think they'd take all the coal out in one day, wouldn't you, with a machine like that?
Boy, they take a lot out in a day.
Yeah.
They do. But, of course, coal mining was a good paying profession or
was it?
Job in those days,
uh-huh.
yeah.
Uh-huh.
We were, I'd say we, when I was in college there, we were making about average, and I'd say, $60 to $70 every 2 weeks.
What year was that?
Well, that would be about 1939. Would be when
oh,
I
that's
started.
Good pay, isn't it? Yeah.
And well, comparing
at the same time, I was making $12.75 in Murphy's
Butter. That was a week.
Uh-huh.
$12.75 a week.
Uh-huh.
I was making probably $30-$35 a week.
Uh-huh.
And everybody uh-huh. considered us rich, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But during the Depression, it was hard pickings because there was no work. You know,
mm-hmm.
we worked. I didn't work during the Depression, but my dad would work maybe one day a week, maybe two
oh,
days
that
a week.
Right? Oh.
And it was just all we could do to
mm-hmm.
get by.
Yeah.
And,
were you born in number five?
No, I was born in Scotland.
Oh, you were? Oh, is that right? Oh. My mom and dad are from England.
Is that right?
Yeah. Whereabouts in Scotland?
Well, about 20 miles from Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah, I did
a little
that.
Town by the name of Stonyburn.
North of Edinburgh, along the railroad? I took the railroad up
no,
north
it'd
of
be kind of southeast.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
A little town of Stonyburn was the post office where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
My dad came from Armadale. And all I heard all my young life was Armadale this and Armadale that and Armadale this. When I was in school, about, I suppose, in fifth grade or so, one of the questions on this history or geography exam, I don't remember what it was,
mm-hmm.
I think geography, name three of the largest cities in Europe. And I put down a couple, maybe Paris and
yeah.
Berlin and Armadale. Armadale was probably 2,000 population, but he had it looking big to me.
Uh-huh.
But it was really something.
Were there any other? And he settled in number five. Is that
mm-hmm. He came there because his brother had come down there from Nova Scotia. He'd been working in Nova Scotia in the mines, and he came down to there. And
uh-huh.
he wrote to my dad in Scotland, and he said that he thought he ought to bring his family over. Well, there were mom and dad and three of us. My brother, who is the president of Northwest Bank down here now, and myself and my sister, who's a teacher in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
brought the three of us all over from Scotland,
uh-huh.
1925.
Were you the only Scots town family in town?
Oh, no. My dad came over first with Will Miller. Will Miller worked with him in the mines in Scotland,
uh-huh.
and Will Miller was the brother-in-law of this Gene McCall that killed her boy in school.
Oh, I see. Oh, you knew the family then.
Oh, yeah. Very, very well we knew them. Mm-hmm. And Will Miller's wife and Jean McCall were sisters. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, he came over with Will Miller. And of course, my dad's brother was here. There was a family by the name of Bell from Scotland. We didn't know them in Scotland. But, mm-hmm. There was a family by the name of Halls from Scotland. There was the superintendent of the mines was George McCrae, an uncle of Jim McCrae that has the appliance store down here.
Oh, is that right? Oh.
He was the top poncho of the mine. Uh-huh. And then, Jim Sample was Scotch. He's the guy who got my dad in trouble.
Yeah. How'd that happen?
Getting my dad in trouble with his wife, with my mother. Mm-hmm. It was Prohibition days, uh-huh. And my mother just despised drinking. Type, you know, she was a very uh-huh. devout woman, and that was one of the things that didn't go down with her. So Jim Sample had made some potato wine, uh-huh. which actually is just plain alcohol.
Oh, is it?
They run cars on that in Germany. back in those days, they made alcohol out of potatoes and run it in their uh-huh. cars, and potent stuff. And so Dad came home. It must have been first January or the end of December 1925. And I can remember.
You had been 4 years old.
Yeah, 4 and a half years old. Mm-hmm. And my dad came home and he was looped. Boy, was he drunk. And he was sick. Mm-hmm. And. I can hear him yet. He's saying, "Mom, I'm going to D, he said. And she says, "Go ahead and D." Then he got over that sick business, and he decided he was going to go see the new 1926 Chevys. They had just come out. And he had a 1925 Chevy. And my mother didn't put up a fuss about that too, but he backed the 25 Chevy out of the garage, and it was a hill, went back down into a bunch of elderberry bushes back there, and he didn't get stopped, and he backed clean down into those elderberry bushes and got stuck. So he couldn't get back out with snow and uh-huh. what have you, so finally, but that was the trouble he got in. That was the biggest trouble, biggest trouble my dad was ever in, I think.
He was law-abiding type, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah, too much so. I've often said I think sometimes that they instill too much of a conscience in most of us.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh. Well, you were raised in number 5, huh?
Yeah, I was there till, I was there from 1925 until 1942. I graduated from Grove City College in 42, and I got my draft notice about 2 weeks later.
Oh.
And I had to go into the service in World War II. Uh-huh. And then when I come back, my brother still kept the house. My mother died just before I left. Right after Pearl Harbor, she died, about 2 days, I think. Mm-hmm. And then my dad was killed while I was in there in about 43, I believe it was.
He was killed?
He was killed by a mobile accident.
Oh.
Not an accident. He was fixing a flat tire and somebody ran over him. Going to Sharon to work. Uh-huh. The mines had closed, and he was working in Sharon Steel.
Oh, I see. The mines closed in the war?
The mines closed. They had taken out their allotted amount of coal that they could have. What if they had were to take out any more, it would have been too expensive.
Oh, I see.
I mean, they had to.
I get you. Huh? Like an oil well that's down to the bottom. Huh?
There's too much overhead, you know, to get the coal out that far.
Yeah.
As we were number 2. Do you know where number 2 mine is?
Yeah.
You know where Brent is?
No.
Well, when you go from number 2 to the Slippery Rock London Road,
yeah,
it goes through there, you go right through Brent.
Oh, I think I know
another
the place.
Town.
Little, yeah, about 10.
Little mining town.
15 houses, yeah. That, I think I do know it, yeah.
Well, from number two there, so I think it's almost 2 miles. Yeah, from where we went in the mines. And that's where we were working, my
oh,
dad and I.
Right?
Were clean under Brent.
Oh.
And
pretty
we traveled that
out.
Far under the ground. Mm-hmm. And if we quit early, we had to walk out.
Oh, yeah?
All the way to number two. To
oh, that's get quite
out.
A walk, huh?
Yeah, underground.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of town was number five when you were young?
Well, it was a, there were good people living there then. Number five has deteriorated.
Oh,
has yeah.
Did they build those houses before the coal mine?
They built the U.S. Steel built those houses for the miners. And they had the mine in the old number five hotel is down beyond it.
There was a hotel there, huh?
It's still
it,
there.
No, it wasn't a hotel then. It was a boarding house that
uh-huh.
the company had for the men.
It's still there.
It's
oh,
still
it?
There.
The third floor got the car on fire, and they lowered it a floor, but
have you
it's
been
still
down?
There. You've got to go in there.
Have,
no,
have you been down through number five?
It's the blinking light, isn't it?
Yeah, at that
make
blinker,
left.
Turn left when you're
oh.
going toward Leesburg.
Uh-huh.
Turn left and go right down through the town.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the town, you'll make a sharp right, and right up there at the top of the hill, on the
right.
after you make the right, is they call it Pride Moore Hotel now.
Yes.
It's a hotel now?
Yeah, they have a beer joint there now.
Oh.
You should stop in there and have a beer
yeah.
on your way home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I'll have to see it.
If you're going to write a history
really
on these
should.
Things, well, you should
yeah.
get an idea of...
You'll see some
yeah.
characters in there.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Today, it's really...
Oh, they aren't bad.
Oh, they're...
What I mean, they wouldn't hurt you.
Look, you can get taken
but
upstairs
they're
and
a bunch
run
of,
there.
There's
a hotel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They're almost down to the dregs of humanity.
They had the miners ate there and stayed there then, didn't they,
Joe? Yeah, the miners didn't have wives and it would stay at the boarding house and they got their meals and their rooms. And they... Mrs. Kovacs ran the boarding house when I was a kid there.
Is she still living?
Oh, I don't know. No, I doubt it very much.
Then it was a better town back then. Is
oh,
it?
Yeah, it was a far better town. The people were genuine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were all nationalities, but they were good people.
Uh-huh.
They were Italians and Hungarians.
Not everyone,
and I'll tell you, most of their families have turned out real well.
Uh-huh.
But they're not very, I don't think there are any of them living out there now.
Uh-huh.
Those families.
Yeah.
See what happened when
the
mines closed, they some man bought the whole town,
mm-hmm.
and then he sold it the houses individually to people that wanted to buy them.
Yeah.
Well, then they were low priced, and so they attracted
undesirable.
Yeah, right. People that couldn't afford a decent house.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
So this is how that all came about,
mm-hmm.
but. But you take most of the boys that came from number five that, like I say, have been very successful. The fellow I ran around with, he graduated from Grove City College too.
What's his name?
Pete Heidi, and he's a representative for A.C. Nielsen in the survey.
How do you spell his name?
H-Y-D-U. He was Hungarian.
Dress shop
yeah,
town.
They had a dress shop in town.
Yeah.
My brother is president of the bank. I had.
Oh, that's
interesting. I was going to teach, but the teacher's pay was so low when I came out of the service. They wanted to pay me $1,600 a year to teach school,
uh-huh.
and I was making about $3,200 in the Air Force. I was flying,
uh-huh.
and I wasn't about to
yeah.
half my pay, you know.
Yeah.
So I got into the insurance business,
uh-huh.
which was far more lucrative.
That's teaching, huh?
Yeah. I would have liked to have taught. Uh-huh. I had a Latin French major with
oh, did you?
History
oh.
and social studies minor,
uh-huh.
and I knew my cookies on that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I mean that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be a teacher,
uh-huh.
but there are. Financial commitments
yeah.
too, you know, and had, my sister graduated a year before I did from Grove City College, the one that's in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and she went up to teach at Cowdersport that year for $900 a year.
$900, wow.
So you know...
That's bare bones, huh?
Yeah. We can make more in the coal mines.
Yeah.
So anyway, why
she's married to a minister.
Dr. William Rice.
They live in where?
Allen Park, Michigan. He's a minister. He has his own church there and school, or from grade school right through high school.
Oh, uh-huh. What? Where is that
Baptist,
located?
Allen Park.
Where's Allen Park? My wife's from Detroit.
Don't ask me that because
north of Detroit or south?
I think it's a little south and
west.
More toward Toledo, you know.
I know. Well, I guess we ought to talk about the famous murder. Did you know Mrs. McCall yourself?
Yes.
What was she like?
She was a big woman.
Big, huh?
Yeah, she was a big woman.
She was in your house that morning, wasn't she? Babe?
Yeah.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, she had. We got two newspapers. We got them in the mail. Newcastle News, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Newcastle paper, anyhow. I don't think they even have a Newcastle paper now. Maybe they do. But we got two. And Jean McCall walked up from down where they lived to our place every afternoon and picked up the paper, our extra paper, and took it back down there.
Oh, I see.
And so she had come up.
You were home with
Yeah, I was home with poison ivy or poison sumac. I can't remember which it was. I was allergic to both those things. And I was just wondering, but it was poison ivy. But well, I was always out rooting around the woods. We were always in the woods.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, well, I had this poison, and it was pretty bad. My knee was all swollen, and of course it was a good excuse to be off school too.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, it was Valentine's Day, and I was in first grade, so 6 and 1 is 7. So I was six in 1927 in August, so 28 in February. Must have been February 14th, 1928.
Uh-huh.
On that. And she came up to our house, and my mother knew her history of mental trouble.
She'd had mental trouble.
Yeah, she'd had mental trouble. And
she was in Solomon, Scotland, wasn't she?
I don't know that.
Well, Luke Ball told me that.
Well, that's Luke Ball's story. I don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mother never said that.
The paper said something about her having trouble in Scotland.
Yeah. Well, I knew she had mental trouble. Whether she was institutionalized or not, I don't know.
So, yeah.
But I know she had mental problems.
Now, you told me on the phone that she had a knife at the crib earlier.
Right. Now, my mother told me this, too, that Jack came in and caught Jean leaning over the crib with a knife, you know.
Uh-huh.
And Lawrence was just a baby. And he said, "What are you doing, Jean?" And she said, I'm going to scrape his brains. Well, now, in my opinion, if that had been my wife, she'd have had psychiatric care right now, and I mean, I wouldn't have her around my baby.
Mm.
Would you?
No, it's dangerous.
So
he didn't, huh?
Apparently he didn't, and so they. But that day that Jean came up for a paper, and she came in, and she had her coat wrapped around her tight, and she had that knife in there. She went directly from our house to school.
Oh.
She had that knife in her dress somehow or other in there. And my mother, that mailman hadn't come yet, but he was due any minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what time it was. It must have been like maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 1:30, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And our mail came out of Mercer, and the mail RD6 Mercer. And so she said to Jean, "Well, sit down, Jean, and wait a few minutes, and the mailman will be here and get your paper." And we had an oil cloth, tablecloth, you know.
Yeah.
Not everybody had them in those days. And we had an old bread knife. The handle was off it, you know, red serrated edges.
Yeah.
And the handle was gone. It was flat. And it was laying on the table. Of course, everybody made homemade bread in those days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
stove. Like, as soon as your back was turned, my mother just looked at the tablecloth and just slid that knife under there.
Is that right? Did she suspect that
she just
dangerous?
Didn't suspect anything. She just didn't trust Jean.
She didn't trust her.
Mm-hmm. She didn't. She had apparently.
After knowing that story about
all this, well, my mother was a very cautious woman. Anyhow, she always kept the doors locked, and you know, she was.
But there was some notion that she just might be dangerous.
Unduly, she might have been unduly alarmed. But
how'd Mrs. McCall treat her child? Was she get, she loved him and got along?
Seemed
with him?
To, yes. And I told. Well, then Jean went directly from our house up to the school and did her dastardly deed up there.
What was her attitude? Was she upset in any way? Did she seem perfectly normal?
See, I was just 6 years old, and I wouldn't
hardly
notice, you know.
Yeah.
Probably would. Anyway, but the woman went up there and did that, and then as soon as she killed that boy, why, she gave the knife to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she wanted to do.
Yeah.
Hmm. Now the mayor, or ex-mayor of Grove City's wife, Edith Perry, she was there that day.
What was her maiden name, Bill?
D. Bartlemeo.
She's in town?
Yeah. She's nervous.
Jim Perry. If you were going to talk to her,
I'd go through him on it because she is kind of a nervous person. I don't know. I haven't seen her for a long time, you know. But
what do you remember that when? When did you first hear what had happened?
Well, then just a few minutes after she left, I see the kids all running home with it. It was raining a while, but they were running, and they were crying, going down past our house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Valentine's Day. It was a funny day for everybody to be crying.
Yeah.
And, I mean, some of them were, you know, were very loud.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "What?" To my mother, I said, "Look, I said, kid, we didn't get out of school 4 o'clock in those days, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was only around 2, something like that." And they were coming out and running down the street there, and I said to my mother, "What's going on?" I said, "All the kids are running home," and I said, "They're all crying." And I don't know whether one of the other neighbor women come running over and told us or what happened, but we found out very shortly what the story was.
You would have been in that class.
I would have been there if I'd been in school that day.
Mm-hmm.
It was first and second grade in that little class, in that little school. The second grade sat in these two rows here, and the first grade sat in these two rows.
He was second grade?
I was in first grade.
He was the boy?
He was in second grade.
Did you know him?
Mm-hmm.
What was he like?
Nice boy. Nice boy. He was my horse.
Oh.
You know when you get take another boy on your shoulders and you bump
yeah.
each other?
Chicken fight.
Yeah,
huh?
Chicken fight.
Yeah.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
We chicken fought all every recess, and he was my horse. I'd ride him, and we'd bump them around, you know.
Yeah.
And he always wore one of these leather aviator caps, you know.
Yeah.
Like World War One caps. Always had one of them on. Very nice boy.
Uh-huh.
And
well, was there much excitement in town, or did you go out to find out what had happened?
Not really. The company store was right across the street from the school.
Uh-huh. Where was the school?
Where?
Today.
All right.
Is it there now?
No. You make a right at the blinker. Talking about
going toward Leesburg.
Yeah, make a right there, about 100 yards up on the right. You'll see a brick school.
Uh-huh.
That school was built after this all had taken place.
Uh-huh.
There was a little wooden school that sat right just past that school, and like sit right about in front of it. You know, and they tore it down, but. That was where the school was, and the other school is still there. I think the fire department uses it now because it's consolidating the Grove City. They'll come in the bus to Grove City, you know.
Yeah.
This Lou Fall, that was a teacher in the second school building, Emma Shrine was in this book, the boys' building. She's one of my customers, and she told me that the state police came in her school and told her to keep her children. They've taken a blind down
that right?
And the blind didn't even reach far enough to cover it all. Uh-huh. And she can tell some stories.
Oh, she wasn't killed instantly. Wasn't killed instantly.
You know how when you cut a chicken's head off, it'll flop around. I suppose the boy just got up and ran.
He would be dead. You see, his throat was cut from ear to ear.
Yes, but the
nervous.
I can remember seeing it in the casket.
The nerves.
See the knife mark in here, and you get the collar up pretty high, but it was...
Oh, ear to ear, huh?
Yeah, right around the shoulder. Lou Fall, you took a good talk to her.
Lou said Eva told her there was nothing but a piece of skin holding the boy's head to
But Eva Prine was a teacher, and it was her first, I think it was her first, right now I've been her first year teaching, but might have been her second, but it was very early in her career. She had graduated from Slippery Rock Normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a 2-year deal that it could teach then.
Yeah.
And she lived on when you passed the blinker light, she lived in the first farm on the right. There's a big white house up there, and there was a barn on the left and torn down. But her dad, Otto Whiting, was a Swede, he farmed that farm there, and Eva was his daughter, and she taught school in that school, so Eva must have been, when you get out of Normal, you'd probably be 20 years of age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she couldn't have been more than 21 at the time.
Yeah.
Well, I was 6. That makes her 15 years older than I am, and I'm 60.
Mm-hmm.
So she's about 75. She's in good health.
Lou's going to be 80.
Lou Fall's going to be 80. But see, Lou didn't teach in this brick school to the right. On up above Whiting's farm, just about 50 yards, on the left, there was another school that was the 7th and 8th, it was 4th, 5th, and 6th, and 7th and 8th grades in it. It was right in the corner of the woods up there. And it burnt. It burnt when I was in 6th grade. Then we had to go to church, or to school in Nazareth Church. And I went there for the rest of that year. They built that brick school then. That's when they built the brick one.
Who are the eyewitnesses now? Who could I contact who's an eyewitness who would be a good person to talk to?
Well, the teacher, of course.
She's
your best eyewitness. Uh-huh. Eva White, Eva Prine.
She'd be 75. Eva Prine?
E-B-B-A. P-E-R-R-I-N-E.
Where does she live, you know?
She lives on Woodland Avenue. I gave your address the other night.
Yeah, I've got it home. Okay.
If you lose it, why, it's in the phone book.
Okay.
Who would have been some of his classmates?
Harry Prine.
Who would have been in this class with that boy?
Well, Pete Heidi, my buddy, would be in there, but Pete was, Pete's out in Indiana.
Yes.
And
Jim Perry's wife.
Jim Perry's wife. The fellow that owns WEDA through the city.
Well, I suppose the teacher would be a good...
Oh, she'd be the best.
Yeah.
She could tell you who else...
And I'm sure if you told her who you are and what you want, why, I'm sure she would be glad to talk to you. I don't think that she'd be... After all these years, I don't think it should bother her that much.
I wouldn't think so.
You know.
Yeah. Did you go to school the next day, or what happened? What'd they do about the blood and all that sort of thing?
I think they had a couple of days off there. I could scrub that up, and the floors were all freshly oiled when we went back. You know, wood floor.
Oh, I see.
And they used oil on them.
There were a lot of exciting things going on out there. Other murders and.
Yeah.
Were there other murders there?
There was. There was a Bruno Kangemi, or Bruno, Bruno. What was his name? Bruno Kangemi. Yeah, Bruno Kangemi was murdered one night down there. They had a boarder. I can't think of his first name. His last name was Pantello.
Uh-huh.
And they were having one of their big wine parties, and they got into it. Bruno and the boarder.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why, but I think it was. I think he was making advances to his wife or something. Uh-huh. I don't know. But anyway, Pantello, Bruno went after Pantel. Umbrella was a big man. He reminded you of Mussolini.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He went after Pantello, and Pantello was one of these center Italians, you know, mm-hmm. that more the lover than the fighter.
Yeah.
And he started after him, and Pantello stabbed him.
Oh, he did, yeah.
And Bruno staggered back and got a gun out of a drawer there, and as Pantello was fleeing from the house, he shot him in the leg, and then Pantello went out across the field to the, where the mine dirt dump was in the snow, and somebody called the state police, I guess, and they came down. They went down through there, and of course they caught him. He couldn't get very far with
mm-hmm.
wounded in the
yeah.
in no vehicle and
yeah.
in the snow. You're not going very far. You didn't have to be a mm-hmm. Northwest Mounted policeman to catch him.
Yeah.
But they got him. I don't remember what they did to him.
What year was that? Do you remember the date?
I don't remember the date on that. Pardon?
Were you at
home? Oh, yeah, I was just a little boy. That's why my memory's so fuzzy on it. There was nothing happened after I got big enough to
remember.
Going on, I guess.
What was the story you told about Grace Moretti's, was it her father?
No, that one there is more, that was all hearsay anyway. I mean, I wouldn't want to quote that as being gospel because I don't think so. I mean, I think it's true, but I...
You can't prove it, right?
I mean, I...
Was there anything in the papers?
It was whispered, you know.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see.
This Bruno that got stabbed, though, that shot the other man, he died there.
Oh, he did?
After he shot him.
Uh-huh.
He died of the stab wound.
Oh, he did, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh. And there was another man was killed that lived out there, but this was before my time, actually, maybe I was just too small to remember. Maybe I wasn't even over there from Scotland yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny Pompa, and he ran a little grocery store, or meat market, or
yeah,
barber shop.
Yeah, butcher shop.
Butcher shop.
That story,
at number five.
At number five.
How do you spell his name?
Pompa.
Pompa. Okay, Pompa. Okay.
He has a daughter living in Grove City, May. You might call her and talk to her. I don't know
mm-hmm.
if she talked to you or not, but she might.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there's a lot of these Italians, they said, this was a story they told me anyway, that they had a Black Hand gang, you know, Black
mm-hmm.
Hand
yeah.
mafia,
right?
Supposedly. And they were shaking down their people.
Yeah.
That they were trying to shake him down for protection money,
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't pay it. Well, he was stabbed to death right down past Nazareth Church. I'll have to make you a little drawing.
Okay.
Show you where you can drive out there and see what the...
Let's say this is 208 here, coming in from London. 208, this is Leesburg. Should have put that up a little higher, had a little more room to...
One, Bill.
Yeah, I'll have one. And, call it number five mine was because that was the number of the U.S. steel captive mine there.
Oh, I wonder why they got those names.
You see, when you're coming from London to number five mine, here on the left, you'll see, you still see some remains of the dirt dump. Now, where that dirt dump came from was slate that they shot down from the roof above the coal to make the entries higher, so that they could run their cars and their motors and their mules through there.
Where was number four mine and number three mine?
Well, I don't know that. There was another one at Pardo, but they called it the Pardo mine.
Yeah.
Now there's that right there where that dirt dump is where the mine stood, and it was quite a impressive looking mine. I mean, there was this high scaffolding for the cage, we call it, the elevator that brought the. Uh-huh. It was about 90 foot deep, I guess, down in the.
Where is that located? How would I get?
Now look here. You're coming from London.
Yeah.
Here's number five. That's the blinker light.
There. Yeah.
Put the blinker here. Your dirt dump is directly across from my brother's place. You know where it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where the mine was. Right across the road from that.
Oh, that's where it
was. That's where the mine was. And the men walked down here to the work.
I see.
Now this is your town all through here.
Mm-hmm.
And so on down.
Where'd you live from there?
I lived
the
1, 2, 3, the third house on the right. After you make a left.
Yeah.
The first one had burned down.
First one burned down, so now the second one.
Oh, I see.
Now you get down here and make a right, and then the road makes another left. Now it's going to number two. This road, you stay on it, goes to number two.
I see.
Right here is the old boarding house. Right there.
Mm-hmm.
That used to, that's that is now Pride Mer Hotel. Stop in there and get yourself a beer. Some of them.
And where was the school?
Local yokels. All right, now the school that the boy was killed in sat right here. And then there's a brick school here. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
This is the school where the murder took place. But it's gone. The brick school still sits there.
I see.
Because up here, right here on this farmhouse, is Ebba, the teacher. Her name, maiden name, was Whiting, but we'll put Prime. That was a Whiting farm, W-I-D-I-N-G. Up here was the old school that this one replaced. Brick one. This burned.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was in sixth grade and I burned. I had a fella, a Hungarian boy, it was a friend of mine, and he just couldn't learn.
Mm-hmm.
It was practically impossible to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd sit, we had double seats, and he'd sit beside me, and he'd ask me the answers to the questions, you know. And I remember there was one in it was geography class, and he said, "That's number six." He said, "Question number six," and I said, "Cape Cod." And he wrote apricot down.
You didn't quite hear you right, huh?
Was he mad at me for not correcting? I said, "I can't look over your paper. They think I'm trying to cheat from you." He said, "They know better than that."
What made that school burn? Did you ever know?
No. Oh, I imagine overheated stove. There were just old pot-bellied stoves in there, and probably an ash fell out on the floor. And I'll tell you who, Mrs. Weber taught there, Grace Weber. Now, I don't think she was there. No, she wasn't there when I think she came there a year or two after Lawrence was killed. And she was out of Slippery Rock Normal, too. In fact, most of our teachers were. But if you go on down here, there's my tenant bringing back my lawnmower. borrow your, they bring your ice skates back in the summer and borrow your lawnmower.
Yeah, I imagine.
I don't know whether that'll help you or not.
Yeah, that looks pretty good. Yeah, I'm going to go over there and see the place.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. Being as your, no, wait, I'll show you where they lived if you wish.
Yeah, okay.
Past the school here. And the road swings around just a little bend like this. You pass two houses here. Sitting there, not that close. But then there's a kind of a little street goes back in here and back like this, and there's two houses sit back there. They were double houses, double two-family houses.
Duplex, huh?
Duplexes. Yeah. And McCall's lived in that one right there. Mm-hmm. And the Millers lived in this one.
Uh-huh.
That was her sister.
I see.
Now, the doctor had told her, and that's why I said I didn't want to get any names involved, really, because the doctor had told Mrs. Miller not to let her go anywhere, up even up to the store by herself.
Oh, is that right?
But Mrs. Miller was one of these housewives that she, if she was doing something, if it was wash day, she had to wash.
Uh-huh.
And she couldn't stop and go with her sister up the street.
You mean the doctor was that concerned that she would be violent?
He must have been.
And she didn't belong out free then.
And I think, I think they deported her is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Then
her husband went with
whether
her.
He went with her.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I'll never tell you. I just, it seems strange.
Well, do you remember what happened to her after the murder? Did they take her somewhere?
They took her.
Did you see
they
her?
Took her, no. I didn't see her, but they said they took her to Mercer. You know, the state police took her up there. And from there on, I don't really know what happened, but she was.
She was deported.
But I'll tell you, Ebba could tell you, or Lou Fall, that I gave you her name too. That's one of Kay's victims.
Yeah, she sounded like she was.
Oh, really?
She kind of felt her out the other.
F-A-L-L, Fall?
F-A-U-L-L.
Oh, yeah, right.
Lula.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 80 years old. But
yeah.
She's got her.
She's got her
marbles.
Oh, I'll say. I hope I can be like her when I'm 80. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Kay felt her out the other day. She was doing her hair since I talked to you on the phone. And she was telling her all this. She knows more about that Pompa murder than I do.
Oh, okay.
And if I were hunting down a history on that. Is it Mercer County you're interested in? Or
well,
just
mostly Mercer area, the town of Mercer.
There was a Wilson family that was murdered.
Right, after the war.
Oh, yeah, that was during.
Yes, I haven't gotten that far, but everyone tells me.
That was during World War II.
Yeah.
And then this McCoy was killed.
Rose City.
Over here in Rose City. I don't think they ever did find out who killed her.
The one who was axed? Is that
yes, in the basement.